We're doing a quick review of what we learned in the Ein Yaakov. We'll try to review the fourth chapter of Brachot in the Ein Yaakov. So, the first thing we learned was that the three prayers a day have a correspondence to the patriarchs, to the Avot, and they have a correspondence to the sacrifices, the Tamid of the morning and the afternoon. The Gemara brought verses to support that. We discussed that Avram, the second letter in his name, is a beis, corresponding to Boker, the morning prayer. Yitzchak is Tzadi, Tzohorayim. Yaakov is Erev, evening. We said that the timing of the prayers definitely corresponds to the sacrifices. The morning sacrifice could be brought in the morning until noon, or according until 4 hours, in the, according to Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and that's the way it goes with the prayer as well, etc. Then we learned that one who prays directly behind his Rebbe causes the Shechina to leave Israel. Looks like he's bound to his Rebbe. One who speaks to his Rebbe as though he is his equal, as though he's someone of the run of the mill. So, or he responds to his Rebbe, he greets him, or he responds to his greeting in a way that shows that they're equals, or that his Rebbe is one of the mill, so that also causes the Shechina to leave Israel. And one who sets up a yeshiva that argues on his Rebbe's yeshiva, or he quotes something that's not really from his Rebbe, all of these cause the Shechina to leave Israel. Then we had the famous story of the student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who came before Rabbi Yoshua and asked him whether the evening prayer is Rishos or Chova. What level of obligation do we have for the evening prayer? Is it a serious obligation, what's called a chova, or is it a light obligation, what's called rishus? And Rabbi Yeshua ruled it is a rishus. Rabbi Gamliel ruled it is a chova. The student, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, asked him, but Rabbi Yeshua said it's rishus. They said, let's wait till all the students come in. When the students came in, the question was posed again, and Rabbi Gamliel ruled it was chova, a serious obligation. And then Rabbi Gamliel asked, does anyone disagree? And Rabbi Yeshua said, no. And then Rabbi Gamliel asked him, but they quote you as having said that you ruled it is Rishus. And then he ordered Rabbi Yeshua, stand on your feet. And Rabbi Yeshua stood on his feet. And Rabbi Yeshua was an old man. Rabbi Gamliel was a young Nasi. And Rabbi Gamliel kept teaching while Rabbi Yeshua was left standing. And the nation said, enough is enough. And they told the loudspeaker, the human loudspeaker, stop quoting Rabbi Gamliel. They demoted Rabbi Gamliel. And at that point, they asked themselves, who should we appoint as our leader, our new Nasi? If we appoint Rabbi Akiva, as great as Rabbi Akiva is, he doesn't have merits of his forefathers to stand on his own merits. Well, maybe from Shemayim they'll punish him. Because Rabbi Gamliel isn't pleased. Obviously, Rabbi Gamliel is demoted. So in Shemayim that has weight, and maybe Rabbi Akiva will be punished if he is appointed. Who should we appoint? Rabbi Yoshua. He's the one who the whole argument began with him. That's going too far. To paint Rabbi Gamliel and make his opponent, to make him the Nasi, that's not right. So they established Rabbi Lezer ben Nazaria. He was a wealthy person, he was a sage, he was 2 generations to Ezra. Smart, so he could answer questions. Wealthy, if he's needed for political activity, he could go, and he knows how to deal with the aristocracy. He's 10 generations from Ezra, that if Rabbi Gamliel is upset in Shemayim, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's merits of his forefathers will protect him. So they asked Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is it okay with him to become the head of the academy, to be the Nasi? He said, let me ask my wife. He went home, and his wife said, if they're demoting leaders, they might just demote you too. So he said, yeah, but still, we don't say we won't use fine china because it'll break. We don't say we won't use fine thin glass because it'll break. She said, yeah, but for you to be the leader, you're a youngster, you have no white hairs. He was 18 years old, and that night he had 18 strands of white hair. God caused them to grow into his beard. And that's why he says in Nagada, I am kiven shivim shanaim, as though I am 70 years old, because he wasn't really 70, but he started looking older in his young age. So they appointed him as the Nasi. One of the first things he did was he allowed anyone who wanted to come learn Torah to enter the academy. Rabbi Gamliel used to say, we have to send our KGB and check any potential student, what type of lifestyle he's been living. And Rabbi Yeshua said, no, whoever wants to learn, we don't have to check if he's living up to what he claims to be. It's enough that he seems decent. And then the academy filled up, and they added 700 benches or 400 benches to the academy. Rabbi Gamliel thought, maybe I erred. I prevent the Jews from learning Torah. And at night they showed him pitchers filled with white pitchers filled with ash, to indicate on the outside they look nice, but on the inside they're ash. Don't think you were wrong. But the truth is, the Talmud says they just showed him that dream to make him feel good. The truth is that he was wrong. The Talmud rules like Rav Lazar ben Azariah. A student wants to learn Torah, you accept him. You don't go checking with your KGB, does he really live up to what he says he is. And that day, they learned so much Torah, they learned a whole new tractate called Eduyos, testimonials that were given in that day. And any time you find in the Talmud or the Mishnah that says Bo Bayom, on that day they said, it's referring to that day that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah became Nasi. And it seems, even though it's called the day, it seems it was a period. It seems, the Talmud says, a fantastic statement, says there was no questions left hanging on that day. Any questions they had, they were able to figure out, because they had so many new students and so many people who could quote the things they had heard from their teachers. And even Rabbi Gamliel came that day. The Gemara quotes that day Rabbi Yehuda Ger Amoni came and asked, am I allowed to marry into the Jewish people? Rabbi Gamliel says, Asur. Rabbi Yeshua said, Mutar. Rabbi Gamliel says, but the Torah says an Amoni Ger is not allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Rabbi Yeshua told him, yeah, but Sancheriv mixed up the whole world. There's no more Amon, there's no more Moab. Everything's been confused. And we assume he's from any nation. Rabbi Gamliel says, but the verse says that the Ammonites will return. Rabbi Yeshua says, yeah, and the verse says the Jews will return. If we haven't yet returned to our sovereignty in the land of Israel, neither have they. And so he's allowed to marry into the Jewish people. Rabbi Gamliel saw that he had erred, he had gone too far, so he went to appease Rabbi Yeshua. When he came to Rabbi Yeshua's house, he saw the walls were all black. He said, I see from your walls that you deal with coals, you're a blacksmith. So Rabbi Yeshua said, woe to the generation that you are the leader. Woe to the ship that you are the captain. You don't know how the wise men of the generation have to suffer to make a living. You don't know how hard it is for us to make ends meet. Rabbi Gamliel says, I went too far. Forgive me. So Rabbi Yeshua didn't answer. So he said, okay, do it for my father's honor. He agreed. So he agreed to forgive him. Now he has to be reinstated. They said, who's going to go and tell the rabbis? So one person who was a cleaner, he said, I'll go tell them. Rabbi Yeshua sent a message. The one who always wore the clothing, the royal coat, let him wear it. And the one who doesn't wear it shouldn't start wearing it, and tell the guy who's really fit for the job, you leave your post and I'll wear it. Rabbi Kiva said to the rabbis, lock up the doors, because Rabbi Gamliel has a lot of servants and they might come up and start beating us up. So we have to lock the doors so the servants don't beat us up. Rabbi Yeshua says, okay, I'll go myself. And the next morning Rabbi Yeshua came, started banging on the doors, and he said, Maze bin Maze Yaze. The one who's, he sprinkled the ash, he's the Kohen Gadol. His father sprinkled the ash, he should be the one sprinkling the ash. He shouldn't, someone who's not a sprinkler nor the son of a sprinkler, shouldn't tell the sprinkler, the son of a sprinkler, your water is cave water and your ash is simple ash. It's not true. Rabbi Gamliel is fit to be the Nasi, reinstated. Rabbi Kiva says, okay, Rabbi Yeshua, if you forgive him, we did it out of honor for you, Rabbi. So you and I tomorrow morning will go and greet him and tell him to return. And then they allowed Rabbi Gamliel to give the speech. He was the Nasi 3 weeks, and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was 1 week. And that's the end of the story. Yes?
Did I hear you say that the Amoraim will become sovereign again?
That the people of Israel. It's talking about when Mashiach comes. And Am Yisrael returns to their boundaries. Maybe it'll happen soon.
But it didn't mention the Amoraim.
Doesn't say specifically the Amoraim. It quotes a pasuk in Amos. We'll get there, Be'ezrat Hashem. We're in the middle of the book of Amos on Fridays. We'll get there. It's at the end of Amos.
I'm not there.
Huh?
I'm not there.
Ah, right. Okay. We had said that the Musaf prayer could be said all day. Rabbi Yochanan says, if you miss the seventh hour, if you're going to daven Musaf in the afternoon, that's called a poshea. Rabbi Zeira, when he was weakened from his learning, he'd go and sit in the entrance of Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvia. He said, when the rabbis walk by, I'll stand in their honor and at least I'll be doing a mitzvah. He needed a break from his learning. Ben es manim to him. You see, even the rabbis of the Gemara needed a break from their learning. So they looked for other mitzvahs they could do. Exercise mitzvahs. He stands up, he sits down. Okay, so he sat there. And the rabbi himself came out, Rabbi Natan Bar Tuvia. So he asked him, you know, that's the way it goes when you're taking a break, so you start thirsting for Torah. You don't get to hear Shirim, you don't get to learn, you're going having a break, so suddenly if you get an opportunity to hear some Torah, you grab it. So he asked them what they say in the academy. He said they quoted Rabbi Yochanan that you shouldn't pass the seventh hour. Then they started discussing if you hit the afternoon and you didn't get down Musaf, which comes first, Musaf or Mincha? So Rabbi Yehuda said, Dam Musaf and then Mincha. He reviewed it 40 times. So he said, is it a new quote? He said, yeah, I thought it was maybe Rabbi Shua ben Levi who said it. Now I know it's Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shua ben Levi, okay, he quoted a quote that it's wrong to Dam Musaf too late. Now we're up to the next Mishnah, Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana's prayer. Anytime he'd enter the academy, he'd say a short prayer that he shouldn't err. And when he'd leave, he'd say thank you to Hashem that his lot is in the academy. And then the Talmud says everyone should say this prayer. May it be the will of Hashem that in my learning I shouldn't cause error, I shouldn't stumble in halacha, my friends should be happy with what I say, I shouldn't say tamei for that which is tahor or tahor for that which is tamei, and my friends shouldn't err in halacha and I should be happy with them. And when a person leaves, a person should say thank you Hashem that you gave my lot to sit in the Beit Medrash, and not of the people who are sitting in the corners being unproductive. They wake up early and I wake up early. They wake up early for their gambling, for things that are pointless. I wake up early for learning Torah. I work hard and they work hard. I work hard and I'll get wages. They work hard and they won't get wages. I run and they run. I run for the world to come and they're running to their own destruction. When Rabbi Eliezer was ill, the Braisa says his students came to visit him. They said, Rabbi, teach us the ways of life, and we'll merit to the world to come. So he said to them, be careful how you honor your friends. Be careful with your friends' honor. That was tip number one. You want the world to come? Think about your friends, how much honor you give them. When you daven, think about who you're davening before. And be careful, don't let your kids spend all their time just reviewing Tanakh. Sometimes it's easy just to review it and rattle it off and off and off and off, and that's not that they won't grow from that. Have your children frequent the knees of the sages, and then you'll merit the world to come. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became ill, his students came to visit him. They saw that he was weeping. They said, Rebbe, the lamp of Israel, the right pillar, the strong anvil, why are you crying? He said to them, if I were going before a king of flesh and blood, he's a passing, fleeting creature. If he gets angry at me, his anger doesn't last eternally. If he binds me, it isn't eternal. If he kills me, his death isn't eternal. And I could even, I could bribe him. I'd still be crying, right? And now I'm going before the King of Kings, Hashem. He's eternal. And his anger can be eternal. His bondage can be eternal. His death could be eternal, and I can't bribe him with anything. And not only that, but as I lie on my deathbed, I see two paths before me, to perdition and the Garden of Eden, and I don't know which one I'm going to be taken on. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't confident. He said, I don't know where I'm headed. I won't cry. So they said, Rebbe, bless us. He said, may it be the will of heaven that you fear heaven like you fear your fellow man. So they said, that's it? So he said, oh, you don't think that's enough? I'll prove it to you. When a man does something that's wrong, when he does a sin, he looks around and he says, I don't want anyone to see me. So you see that we don't fear heaven like we fear our fellow man. Heaven sees at all times. If we could only reach that level, that's a lot. When he was passing, he said, clear the vessels from the room because it's about to become defiled when I pass away, and prepare a chair for Chizkiah, the king of Judah, who's coming to accompany me to the world to come. Rabbi Gamliel says every day a person prays 18 prayers, and the Talmud questioned what do they correspond to. So the Gemara brought many correspondences, either to the 18 mentions of Hashem's name in the 29th chapter of Tehillim, Havu Hashem Ne'elim, what do we give Hashem, how do we praise Hashem? King David worded it in 18 words, 18 times he mentioned God's name, or it corresponds to the 18th time that God's name is mentioned in Shema, or the 18 chulios, the 18 links, so to speak, in the spinal cord. And when we bow in Shemoneh Esrei, all the links in our spine have to itpakiku, till you could see, when the spine bends, so you see the notches in the spine. So all the notches in the spine could be seen. So guys, when you do modem, look down your shirt. I'm joking. Yeah, joking. Okay. Okay. The Gemara says when you bow, you should bow in a way that you could see a coin that's opposite one's heart. And Rabbi Hanin says if a person shook his head, that's enough. When you see that he's ill or he's corpulent and it's hard for him to bow, it's enough that he just shifts a little and he shows he's trying. The Gemara says, wait a second, count them, they're 19. So the Gemara says, yeah, that blessing against the tzedukim or against the minim, that was instituted later. What did that correspond to? So if all the correspondences are to the 29th chapter of Tehillim, that corresponds to Kel HaKavod Hirin. So it doesn't say God's name overtly, it says Kel HaKavod. And if it corresponds to Shema, then that corresponds to Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echod. He is one, that one is also a reference to Hashem's name. And if it corresponds to the links in the spine, so that's corresponding to the small link in the spine. And the Gemara says that Shimon HaPekuli, Shimon who dealt with wool, with cotton, he arranged the Shemoneh Esrei before Rabbi Gamliel in Yavne. The Gemara says they needed to prepare a blessing against the Minim, and Shmuel HaKotan, he knew how to prepare. Why is he called Shmuel HaKotan? You remember the story from the Talmud in Sanhedrin? They once invited 7 rabbis to be the chief rabbis, so to speak, to decide whether they would make it a leap year. And you could only attend this conference with invitation. So they agreed, these rabbis would meet in the attic in such and such a place at such and such a time. They come up to the attic and they see there are 8. So the chief rabbi says, who's here without an invitation? So Shmuel says, me. And he steps down. The Talmud says Shmuel had an invitation, but he didn't want to embarrass anyone else. So from that day onward, they called him Shmuel HaKotan, Shmuel the Minor. Because he put himself down. He didn't want someone else to be embarrassed. Yes.
Why wouldn't the head rabbi have known that too?
Why would it have to take on? Oh, it's a good
question. I like these specials. Sometimes they're just like a missing. Why doesn't the head rabbi think about this before he shouts out who doesn't have an invitation?
So you could answer in a few ways. You could answer that what happened in the story that Rabbi Gamliel had Rabbi Yeshua standing. He was demoted, right? So, was he in error? It seems like he was, because the majority disagreed with him. And what was he thinking? So from the Gemara here, you wouldn't know. But if you open the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses that one of the strengths of Rabban Gamliel was Zilkum Arav HaTalmidim, that one of the responsibilities of a teacher is to cause the students to have respect. We don't know this concept because by us, the world is a different place. We don't know what real Torah is. We're learning Torah, but real Torah, if you had a teacher who had a really, really good tradition, and his Torah was on the level that Torah should be, then part of receiving tradition is recognizing that the person who's giving you tradition is a representative of God in this world. He's giving you something that God gave at Sinai. And one of the responsibilities of a teacher is that the students take it seriously. We're here at Machon Meir, and we're learning Torah in a soft way. We're learning Torah in a way that we're trying to show you the beauty of the Torah and make you want to learn it and help you see the beauty in the Torah. But this is for starters. When you guys will reach a level where Be'ezrat Hashem, you'll be learning at an advanced level, then you'll be in a yeshiva where the Rebbe yells at the students, where the Rebbe doesn't accept all kinds of things that here we turn them blind eye to. You know how many times students call rabbis here by their first name? Rabbis don't say anything. because at our level, at our stage, no big deal. Okay, we're happy the guy wants to learn Torah. Let's not. No one's holding at a level where that makes a difference. But as you grow and you grow and you grow, so then part of your appreciation for Torah is how you treat the person who's giving it to you. And part of the responsibility of that person is that he doesn't forgo it, because it's not about himself. It's about how much do you value the Torah. The Gemara quotes a story that Rabbi Ami said something over in private in the academy. And 22 years later, a student quoted that outside the academy. And he was kicked out of the academy because he was considered irresponsible. If something was said in private 22 years ago, what chutzpah does he have to go quoting it 22 years later? You and I hear that story and we say, what do you mean, 22 years later? Who has to keep a secret for 22 years? To Rabbi Ami and everyone else, it was obvious that a student who can't keep a secret after 22 years doesn't belong in the academy. Kicked out. So they lived on a level of midot that we don't begin to understand. We don't understand it. We don't begin to understand how exacting they were of themselves. You see, it was obvious to them that after 22 years, no one reveals the secret. And if there was a student who did, then he wasn't on the level to be in this academy. Go find yourself someplace else to learn. So, by the same token, if a student enters this chamber, which is the highest chamber, and it's unfitting, so he put himself in a situation where he's really embarrassed himself. They don't have to move forward with the processions without him. When they did Kiddush HaChodesh, it says in Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, a heavenly voice would come out, a baskol would come out. So in order for people to be up there, they had to be on a correct level of holiness and purity and everything else. Now this guy, whoever it was that went up there uninvited, put himself in a situation where he has to be embarrassed. He did it to himself.
So now, because he can ask the reverse question, then why didn't...
So what did Shmuel HaKatan do? The Gemara doesn't tell us the continuation of the story, but I always assumed that when he stepped down, they said, oh, okay, he for sure didn't come up here uninvited. That means we have someone here uninvited. So Shmuel HaKatan held that whoever it was that was uninvited was not on the level that he should get this embarrassment. He held it was more important for him to be embarrassed and not cause it to someone else. So when he stepped down, he was basically ruling, I hold that I'm not going to be a part of this causing embarrassment to this person, whoever it is, and I'm leaving. He left. I assume they disbanded the group and called for another day that they would regroup, or another time. Just like it says in a previous story in the Talmud, that same page in Sanhedrin, says a story that Rebbe was once teaching a class, and someone had eaten garlic, and he came and sat up front next to Rebbe, and any time Rebbe was talking and took a whiff, he'd have to pull back from the smell of garlic. So at some point, Rebbe said, what's going on here? Who entered class and didn't care that he's eating garlic when everyone else is going to sit together and hear class? Arose Rebbe Chia, Rebbe's top student, and said, I'm sorry, and walked out. When he walked out, the academy, everyone understood Rebbe Chia wasn't the guy who ate garlic and was inconsiderate of everyone else. The whole academy walked out, class was cancelled for that day. The next morning, Rebbe's son meets up with Rebbe Chia and asks him, why'd you do that? So Rebbe Chia said, what do you mean? I'm not going to let someone be embarrassed in front of everyone else. Rebbe held, or, you know, Rebbe wasn't an angel. Rebbe was as close as it gets to being an angel. He was a kadosh. But even a person like Rebbe can make a mistake. Sometimes a person reacts right away and then they say, wait a second, maybe I should have done differently. We find that. You find Yehuda ben Gerim, Rebbe Yehuda ben Gerim, the whole story with Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, right? And he went and quoted it to his family, and they ended up quoting it till it got to the Romans. You know what I'm talking about. They had a conversation, how do we view the Romans?
All right.
So
one did a neutral, one is a favorite.
Right. Okay. So he went and quoted it to his family. We ordinarily read the Gemara, and we figure, it was just the guy who was sitting in the academy when they were talking. Wrong. They wouldn't have had such an important discussion in front of common folk. Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, we find in the Gemara in Moed Katan, was a big rabbi. When he left Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's academy, Rabbi Shimon told his son Rabbi Eliezer, go get a blessing from him. He's a big tzaddik. So you see, he was a big person, and yet he made a mistake. People sometimes make mistakes, and even big rabbis sometimes make mistakes. So either they had a difference of opinion as to what was the correct way to react, or one of them reacted in error. That can happen. And the other one had a few more seconds to think about it, or he was quicker on the draw, and he said, no, we shouldn't do that. You see, Moshe Rabbeinu erred that way. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, who stole? And Hashem said, I'm not telling. I'm not going to tell you who stole from the Cheirim of Ai, of Yericho. Of Yericho. Yeah. Yeah.
Did we ever get to the part that says how to get up from the valley?
I think we did.
What was the question?
How you're supposed to bow and how you're supposed to straighten up.
Are we going to review it today?
Today I don't think so, but remind me, we'll get there. So the Gemara says, Shmuel HaKotan, after we have his whole introduction, who is Shmuel HaKotan? He was the one who arranged this prayer. And we had a whole class about why he was most fit, because he did it out of love, he didn't do it out of hate. And then one year he was praying and he was saying Shmona Esrei. He was leading the congregation, he was the chazan, and he reaches the blessing that he himself compiled, and he forgot it, and he pauses and he pauses and he pauses, and everyone's waiting for him. So the Talmud says, why didn't they put in a different chazan? So the Talmud says, because he started saying that prayer and they knew he hadn't switched sides. Ordinarily, if someone skips that prayer, we say maybe he's one of them, maybe he switched sides. But Shmuel HaKatan, he started saying it, and then he paused in the middle. He couldn't remember how it continued. So they waited for him to remind himself. And then the Gemara found correspondences in all the numbers. The 7 of Shabbos, the 9 of Rosh Hashanah. Every time you have a different number, the 24 of Yom Kippur. Every time you have a different number of blessings, there has to be a correspondence in Tanakh. The Gemara then discussed that there is a prayer that's Mayein Shmona Esrei, a sampling. You say a short Shmona Esrei. You say the first three, the last three, and a middle blessing, which is short, that's called Havineinu. The Gemara said, Rabbi Lezer HaTorus, one should not make their prayer Keva. What is Keva? Either that he treats the prayer as it's a weight, or he says it in a way that's, oh, I gotta do this. He has to say it in a way that he's begging before Hashem, externally, internally. He has to express it in a way that shows that he's connected. The Gemara says a person should also try and say something new in every prayer. A person should try to focus his prayer at the times that are best, either nates in the beginning or closer to sunset at the end. And the conclusion is we don't wait till close to sunset because something could happen and you'll miss it. So we don't wait till the last minute. If a person is walking in a place of danger, Rabbi Yeshua taught there's a short prayer that he says, and when he exits the place of danger, he'll fill in the Shmona Esrei if there's still time. The Gemara said, Eliyahu taught Rav Yehuda, the brother of Rav Salah Hasida, don't get angry and you won't come to sin. Don't get drunk and you won't come to sin. And when you're going to travel, speak to God before you go. What do you say to God? So then you have the whole Tfilas Aderech. The Gemara asked, does Tfilas Aderech have to be said standing or not? Two different opinions. And ideally we stand when we say Tfilas Aderech, but you don't have to. You could say Tfilas Aderech while traveling. The Gemara concluded the chapter with telling us that a person who's blind and can't figure out which direction is towards Jerusalem, so he focuses his heart towards Hashem. But ideally, if one could, in Chutzlarts he faces Israel, in Israel he faces towards Jerusalem, and we brought sources from that. If one has to pray two prayers consecutively, let's say he missed Shacharis, he has to daven Mincha twice, Mincha he has to daven Maariv twice, so he has to pause in between the prayers to focus his prayers. And that brings us to the conclusion of the 4th chapter of Brachot in the Ein Yaakov. We did a quick overview, a quick review of the 4th chapter of Brachot.